We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a sign seen on the door of a branch of Tesco's, read by Brian Perkins.
Jen's toilet, every little helps.
Thanks to Bernard Seward of Henley's for spotting that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first, on my right, Linda Smith and Robert Newman. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and John O'Farrell. Linda, easiest question of the week. Why did the debate over global warming become more stormy?
Well, could be the weather we've been having. Basically, it's been slightly unseasonable, is what it's been, really. But I don't know, people seem to be determined. I think half our problem with these things is we're determined to carry on when we should just accept the fact that most of the country is underwater. So there's no point trying to. You see these cars, these people who are standing baffled by the road with their car, you know, in the middle of a lake, basically. And you think, why did you go out, really? There is a point at which plucky tips over into stupid. I think.
There's always something slightly unsavoury about all those wonderful white pin-curled old ladies having piggybacks from firemen. I look at it and I
it's like those two characters from Harry Enfield, isn't it? Oh, young man, young man.
It was terrible because the commuters took 3 or 4 hours to tell the story of how they got into work that morning. It involved huge diversions about how they got in 87, you know. But, you know, and the poor journalists couldn't get in either, so they just used the pictures and stories from 87 and no one noticed, I think.
The disquieting thing for me is that I know that if I were a kid now, my mum would still be saying, bit of rain won't hurt you, get out in the fresh air, go on. Get out and play in the floods, go on. You don't want to be cooped up indoors.
And the government snapped into action to tell us that it may possibly have something to do with global warming. In the same speech, John Prescott also regretted to inform the House that he could confirm early reports that the Titanic had indeed sunk with tragic loss of life.
Still, they're the people's floods, and that's the main thing, isn't it, really?
You see, you criticise the government there, Rob, but you must remember that though it was miserable, the storms under Mrs. Thatcher were a lot worse.
One Buckinghamshire man denied there had been any trouble from the flooding, claiming it was just as easy to get to work as ever, though he did admit that might be due to the fact that he was Steve Redgrave. 2 points to Linda. Robert, welcome to the news quiz.
Nice to be here. I always listen to it, and it's a shame I'm going to ruin it, but...
Sure not. Robert, who fuelled controversy by seeming determined to pour oil over troubled waters?
Oh, this is... The road haulers, they... Despite the fact many of them are multi-millionaire chief executive of haulage companies, they see themselves as the Jarrow Marchers, who, as remember, made that bold appeal when they were saying to their children, sorry, bairns, we haven't enough to pay for their heating this winter, and the downstairs swimming pool will be a bit nippy. And I think people remember that how moved they were by the signs of honk if you bonk, or world's sexiest drive, or whatever. But the other thing is that Jarrow Marchers moved the whole nation when they came down because they were able to endure all this physical trauma and personal hardships and jeopardy in this journey that lasted weeks. If the road hauliers want to impress us, let them come by train. Then we will not only welcome them but love them and be reminded of the fact that in the 70s, 68% of all freight went by train anyway. So what do we need these scab juggernauts for anyway?
There's going to be a convoy, isn't there, of coming down Britain's motorways going 10 miles an hour. They're going to drive along the motorways at 10 miles an hour. And I must say, it's a long time since anyone went that fast on the M25.
And let's hope they went for that amphibious landing craft option.
Also, you know what self-employed people like? Do you honestly believe those freight containers will be empty?
They've said that it's going to be the biggest civil disobedience since the poll tax riots. It's hard to imagine all these sort of Conservatives, you know, rioting, really. They'll be going, oh, quick, make some petrol bombs. Oh, look at that, 85 pence a litre. It's shocking, isn't it?
Farmers say a convoy of 25,000 trucks and a flotilla of fishing boats will play an integral part in the new protest. The trucks will block roads in the north of England and the boats will block roads in Sussex and Kent. John, who won't be turning back after coming up with 8 billion reasons to vote Conservative?
This is Portillo leaving the No Turning Back group. This is a sort of Thatcherite group, and Portillo is, you know, coming out now and saying, OK, he was a Thatcherite once, but it was a long time ago. He just dabbled with it, you know, and it was an experience. It happened at university. We've all done it once. And so he wants to leave it behind him, and him and Francis Moore to come out together, holding hands. Is that right?
Absolutely right.
I'm quite jealous of him, really, because he said at university he experimented with homosexuality. Well, at my university, we just didn't have the equipment. It's a two-tier system, isn't it?
2 points to John O'Farrell. And, Alan, your piece of music. So tired, tired of waiting, tired of waiting for you.
So tired, tired of waiting, tired of waiting for you.
Alan, who hopes his private deal will return a healthy profit?
Well, this is a health minister.
Yes. Well, you knew all the time.
And this is, I was treading water, as we all have to these days, in the hope that a joke would bob past. And it didn't. Our great health minister wants to do a deal with private hospitals so that in the event of any more serious disorder, like one more patient who doesn't feel too good, the private health service can be dragged down along with the National Health Service. And you will now be on trolleys, and they will be gilt trolleys, and you will have duvets, but you will still die in the corridors because there is this deal to weld the two together. It's like the Reichenbach Falls, and Holmes and Moriarty go down together. And no one understands that if the entire gross national product of this country for 10 years went into the health service, it would still be something like 5% of what was required. You cannot. You just have to die. There is no other excuse, and it's nonsense to spend any money at all on the health service. You just give people an elasoplast of aspirin. If it's not better in the morning, bury them.
You've more than answered the question there. Health Secretary Alan Milburn has signed an agreement allowing the NHS to use spare beds and operating theatres in private hospitals. He described the agreement as a Concord Act, not the best way to give the public confidence. So we start round two with an item seen in the Times.
A footballer has claimed the world record for speed in incurring a red card. Lee Todd was sent off after 2 seconds. Referee Pete Curl ordered him off for using foul and abusive language after he blew the whistle for kickoff, and Todd said, "F*** me, that was loud."
You know, that's only the second time in his entire life that word has passed Brian Perkins' lips.
The other time was during the shipping forecast.
Thanks to Alan Noble and Alan Langford for sending that one in. Linda, which candidates are running neck and redneck?
Oh, of course, Al Gore and George W. Are apparently very close in the polls. One or other of them will be the American president. It's hard to pick a team, really, isn't it, with those? I suppose it makes you a bit glad to be British, really, because ours look like Einstein, don't they, compared? Although apparently that's the problem with Al Gore. The American public don't like him. They think he's clever. And they don't like book learning. And no danger of that, obviously, with George W. Comes out with these extraordinary things, like, as I said, the question is rarely asked, is our children learning?
And George Bush is going around saying the W stands for win. I always thought it was for something else.
The only thing is he doesn't use the W vocally all the time. He has this strange thing, this is radio, of folding his thumb over his little finger and holding those up. Now, the people who are old as I am will remember that's the thing the police did to find out whether he were pissed getting out of a car. So, can you do that? And I look at this man and I think, yes, he probably is.
The American election could be decided in some states by as few as 50 voters, if only George Bush hasn't had them all executed by them. Bush recently told reporters he was pretty much like Ronald Reagan. In what way? They asked. In what way am I what? He replied. Two points to Linda. John, your piece of music.
Ebony and ivory live together in perfect harmony. Side by side on my piano keyboard. Oh, Lord, why don't we?
John, who believes racism doesn't have a prayer?
Ah, this was the Church of England bishops or vicars or something having anti-race training or something. They're having the General Synod, aren't they? And they've been told... one thing they said, actually, was they mustn't be photographed yawning or falling asleep because, obviously, religion isn't boring. It doesn't send you to sleep. It doesn't with me. I jump out of bed and turn off the radio every morning when Thought for the Day comes on. But vicars have to learn to, be more tolerant.
It's Canterbury and York, isn't it? They're being sent off from class.
Yeah.
Saw Canterbury in New York, thought it was about flooding, but it's these two blokes. And they're being sent to a scout hut somewhere and being told that they've got to be nice to black people. You would think after 2,000 years it would have occurred to them, but no, it's institutionalised racism in the Church of England.
I thought this might be about Anne Widdecombe turning to Islam.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sure I read that. I'm sure I didn't dream that. I'm sure that really happened. That she's, I don't know, finding Catholicism a bit wishy-washy on the major issues.
I met the woman who pied Anne Widdecombe, and I said...
What does that mean?
The Biotic Baking Brigade, they go up with these custard pies and they put them in the faces
thank
of...
Thank God, I thought it was something erotic.
No, I think you'll find the sentence included the phrase Anne Widdecombe, and therefore could not have been erotic in any way. And I said, I must shake your hand, that is the best pieing ever. And she said, no, there's been one even better. I said, I find it hard to believe, you must tell me. She said, I will. I said, do so. David Icke. Now, the reason they pied him is because he's got these beliefs in an international Jewish conspiracy, but because David Icke also believes that lizards, disguised in human form, are taking over the planet. By a stroke of genius, the people who pied him came in disguised as lizards. The brilliant thing about this, to my mind, is you know that when David Icke first looked up, there must have been a moment when he thought, so you show yourself at last, as a man.
The Archbishops of Canterbury and York are to go on racism awareness courses to try and rid the Church of England of institutionalised racism. There's been some criticism of the Church's plan to double the number of black priests by the year 2005, with some senior synod members questioning whether parishioners are ready for two black vicars in Britain. So, 2 points to whoever got that right. Alan, whose plan to move out west went west?
Sorry?
Whose plan...
Whose plan?
You were miles away, weren't you? Alan, whose plan to move out west...
I'm sorry, dear, he doesn't recognise you.
No.
He has his good days, he has his bad days. Is that west as in sort of Cornwall or somewhere?
No, not quite as far west as that.
Ah. Is it West London?
Notting Hill.
Southwest then.
West London, yes, we're getting there.
This is not Mandelson.
No.
No.
It's a little closer to home.
Is it West Hill? You don't mean the BBC going to West London?
Direct the news.
I can't talk about that. That's 40 million quid down the tubes. They pay me 7 or 6 to do this. They pay 40 million quid to take Perkins off to the White City, drag him back here for the news quiz. Under the great management of the previous great lamented name, totally escaped me, previous Director General, the entire news team and all their backup from both radio and television went to White City, and the old stadium was converted to keep all these bearded people in, like Perkins, occasionally allowing them to escape and do the news quiz. And the new ones come in and say, no, you can't be in White City anymore, you've got to come back to Broadcasting House, and they're all going to be here. And it's going to cost 40 million quid. It's going to take 6 years. You know why it's going to... Why is it going to take 6 years, Perkins, to get you to come from White City?
It's because of the floods.
Settled there, Brian, did you, in White City? I don't know. They let you have a few bits of your own furniture, but it never felt like home, did it? Jeremy and I once went in there, And I remember Brian was so pleased to see us, it was like in The Simpsons when they go and visit Grandpa. Everyone clusters round the car, we virtually dragged us in. Now come into the newsroom, come and see the newsroom. It was pitiful. Was
it? Thought when the builders move into the BBC, there could be complaints about rude comments and offensive behaviour. But the foreman has told the builders that if it really upsets them, they won't have to work anywhere near the Weakest Link studio. Robert, have a listen to this music. Which musical knight wants his suits to be booted?
Is this something about Elton John and shopping?
Yes.
I started reading it and I thought, life's ever so short.
Right, okay. Did anyone get to the end of the article?
He lost £20 million but didn't notice, is that right?
That's
and,
right.
And he said, oh, I feel so silly now. He said, in his purple corduroy shorts and his big yellow boots. And, so he lost £20 million without really noticing it.
Elton John could find a sum like that down the back of his settee, couldn't he? Rummaging around for some money for a night out. Oh, I know. Oh, look down there. £20 million. Brilliant. Thought I was skint.
Sir Elton John's loathing of boring administrative tasks meant it took him years to realise that £20 million of his money had gone missing. The court was amazed when the star of the show entered wearing silk stockings, red robes and a ridiculous powdered wig, but was disappointed when the judge refused to perform any of Sir Elton's hits. Alan, which grandmaster wasn't so flash this week?
This is Kasparov.
It is.
Kasparov has finally lost it after all these years. They're all very funny now, the Russians, since the wall came down. You can't trust any of them. You used to know where you were. It's like the Germans. Did you see it this week? Do you know, the only submarine protecting us is U-12. It's a U-boat. All ours are the menders. And they put this boat in.
I think the question was about the chess, wasn't it?
It was.
Kasparov is losing to Kramnik. And Kasparov took it from Karpov. And at some point they're going to have to open it out to people whose names don't begin with K. It's not fair on us in the West. We've only got Chris Christopherson and Kiki D.
So what happens in that musical chess, then? Is it just like
that's
a...
That's got I Know Him So Well in, hasn't it?
Yeah. But I can't quite picture it as a musical. It's hardly West Side Story, is it? Two people playing chess.
Just occurred to me, the Germans' timing on this U-boat's very good, really. I mean, it coincides with our floods. They could be in the middle of Doncaster by midnight. I was at university with Chris Christopherson. We did a B-lit together. Chris Christopherson was a very serious Rhodes Scholar, a very bright bloke.
My castaway next week.
will be the entire population of Shrewsbury. It's the news that the chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov is on the verge of losing his title after 15 years. The highlight of his career was beating once the chess computer Deep Blue. Kasparov went away triumphant, but the computer went away with the consolation that at least it had a better social life. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the East Sussex edition of Ad News.
The Hastings Borough Bonfire Society has been given a new mobile caravan. The old one was set on fire.
Thanks to John Mulhall of Bexhill for that. Linda, listen to this. Linda, it's plain to see that Who certainly isn't still standing out in the South Atlantic.
Oh, this is a sweet story. It's the little penguins, isn't it? The penguins out in South Georgia are so engrossed watching the aeroplanes and helicopters going above that they keep watching them as they go over and eventually just fall flat on their backs. I mean, it's not funny, really, because if there's no one there to help them out, they're just stuck. They're just lying there. But that's what happens, and they're sending a team of scientists out to find out what effect this may have on their breeding patterns. Fairly disastrous, I would have thought, really, but It's quite sweet to know that penguins always look so sophisticated with a black tie, and it's nice to know that they can still wonder at an air show.
They spent 3 billion years evolving, wanting to fly, knowing they're birds, looking in the mirror saying, I'm a bird, and they've got these little tiny flippers. And then something comes over, which is made out of iron, and it flies. They spent 2 billion years, as you say, developing the tuxedo, and they can't fly. That's why they fall over, and just in absolute rage and anger and sadness.
It's just a wind-up, do you?
The Royal Navy are spending £1 million, apparently, flying over, back and forth over these penguin colonies to see who can make the most penguins fall over. If it wasn't for our, plucky soldiers and airmen, then there would be no penguins falling over in the Falklands. You know, I think we should say now, where are our NATO allies? Where at this point? They should be out there with us. I mean, yet again, our boys are out there. Britain stands alone. Unlike the penguins who are falling over.
Is it only £1 million?
Well, it's probably more than that. It's
the BBC is spending £40 million getting Perkins back and forth across London. I don't think it's a lot of money, really.
Do you think penguins have dressed down Friday? Just wear a jumper and some jeans.
Countless birds of limited intelligence flat out on their backs as far as the eye can see. Every British serviceman's dream come true. Robert, whose finest hour wasn't?
I've no idea.
It's Winston Churchill.
We know too,
Norman
actually.
Tell him Norman Churchill.
He's long dead. He was an actor. He was played by his voice, all the famous speeches.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Apparently, all his speeches on the radio, the famous, we will fight them on the beach.
It was you!
See, that's the thing.
I can do family,
I can play blue, anything. But
it wasn't Churchill.
It wasn't Churchill.
Does that mean the result still stands?
It could be called into question because in reality he didn't have that we can fight them on the beaches voice. His voice was in fact more like Joe Pasquale. So they got an actor in to do his speeches.
We know the actor.
Do you?
It was Norman Shelley. The older listeners will remember was Winnie the Pooh, and I think it's rather great that he ends up as Winnie the Churchill, but he was Winnie the Pooh. Of course Hitler was Charlie Chaplin, you know that. The war was actually fought between Winnie the Pooh and Charlie Chaplin.
It's a discovery of a BBC recording which proves at last that Churchill's wartime broadcasts to the nation were recorded by the late actor Norman Shelley, who was actually best known as Colonel Danby in The Archers. Many people were shocked at the news, though not as shocked as they were to discover that Sir Winston was at the time moonlighting as Walter Gabriel.
Could have been Eddie Grundy. Well, the Germans are coming over, they're going to take our ferrets, they're a fan. We've got to fight them.
2 points to Robert there, but 1 point to Alan for knowing the name of the actor. John, whose new window left them feeling flushed with success?
Oh, dear. Did I miss this one as well? I'm confused because I sat down to watch 9 o'clock news and the presenters all changed. It was Alan Titchmarsh. I've got it now. It's come to me. This is a story about Thomas Crapper, the man who invented the toilet. And I don't know any more than that, because Thomas Crapper is all that Alan has written on his notepad next to me.
It's a church, I think, again, near Doncaster, called St. Lawrence's. And they've got a stained glass window showing the lavatory. It doesn't say what colour the stains are. But they've put this... they've put Thomas Crapper in the window, as it were, with a lavatory underneath him. Or just to his left.
Yes?
So is he a saint, then?
Oh, yes.
Who is he the patron saint of? or what?
Yes, the question referred to St. Lawrence's Church, Hatfield, Yorkshire, where parishioners have decided to commemorate Thomas Crapper, the alleged inventor of the flushing toilet, by featuring a black lavatory pan in the church's millennium stained glass window. Women parishioners claim to be very impressed by the new window, while most men manage to miss it completely. Alan, which first-class passenger was banned for hogging the seats?
It's a pig. It's an American pig that was bought 3 seats in first class by its owner. and it got up for whatever pigs want to do halfway through, and it went down the aisle, eating the food off other passengers' trays. Whenever I've flown, the food isn't fit for a pig, but there we go. And it turned out, actually, to be there for the very good reason that its owner was in therapy, and it had to fly with the pig. But they're not going to let that happen anymore. I mean, don't they deserve either Gore or Bush, really? People like that.
Chris, that was a baffling bit in that report. It said that this pig was essential to this person as a guide dog.
He was ill, wasn't he?
As a guide dog? I mean, it drags its owner into all these snapping
dustbins,
troughs
basically,
and things.
Really, that can't be right, can it? You can't have a guide pig. There's never been a Blue Peter appeal for a guide pig.
It'd be very silly if that's not the answer.
It is. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along.
This is from the Daily Telegraph. It's sent in by Mrs. Lynn. From a letter in the Richmond and Twickenham Times. Maybe other residents would like to have pictures of their back passages published to name and shame Richmond upon Thames Council into having them cleared out.
Robert.
This is from Mike Watton in Wharton-ish Isle of Skye. As a starting point, we operate on the premise that everybody's behaviour is predictable. And if that behaviour changes, it is because something has happened to make it unpredictable, the psychologist wrote.
John.
This was sent in by Jill Jenkins from her local paper in Essex, and it says, a Brighton coroner's officer has appealed for help to find the family of a Romford man who may not know he has died.
Alan.
Goes from the Yorkshire Post, Simon. It says, sheep farmer David Balby, furious at market prices of less than £4 a carcass, has put up a large roadside billboard at his Wensleydale farm saying, original Damien Hirst's two for a tenner.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. After an exciting seesaw battle, Linda and Robert have 16 points, but Alan and John are this week's winners with 17. We leave you with a cutting from the Western Australian sent in by Les Daniel.
There's been a spate of petrol thefts recently. Thieves are helping themselves from vehicles using the old trick of sticking a tube into petrol tanks and sucking petrol out before putting it into their own vehicle. But they left a calling card of vomit down one driveway after discovering that they'd inserted the tube into the wrong tank of a big motorhome. It wasn't the petrol tank.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Linda Smith, John O'Farrell and Robert Newman. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Nev Fountain, Tom Jameson, Dave Cohen and Simon Littlefield, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.